Before we dive in, a quick note that this entire episode is AI-generated, including our voices. Today's show is brought to you by Flowdesk, the fictional smart standing desk that adapts to your mood through ambient lighting. Completely made up, but wouldn't that be nice? As always, some details might be off, so please fact-check anything important before acting on it. I'm Maya, and today we're unpacking some fascinating ideas from Nilan Peiris during his time at Wyze, the fintech company. David, you've spent years in product strategy at scale-ups. What draws you to Peiris's thinking?
What strikes me is how he seemed to thread this needle between product-led growth and mission-driven culture as Wyze scaled massively. Most companies I've seen either become growth machines that lose their soul, or they stay mission pure but can't scale efficiently.
Right, and I come at this from the organizational design side. I'm curious about the structural choices that made that balance possible. Like, how do you maintain coherent decision-making when you're growing from hundreds to thousands of people?
Exactly. And Peiris seemed to have this view that product-led growth wasn't just about metrics and funnels. It was about building something so obviously better that growth becomes almost inevitable.
That's interesting because it suggests the product itself becomes the primary organizing principle. Not just what you build, but how you organize around building it.
Which makes sense for Wyze specifically. Their core mission was transparency in money transfers, something customers could actually feel and measure. Every feature either made transfers cheaper, faster, or more transparent.
That raises a question for me. How do you know when mission alignment is real versus when it's just good marketing wrapped around what was already commercially sensible?
That's sharp. I think with Wyze, you could see it in their pricing decisions. They actively made less money per transaction by showing real exchange rates when competitors hid fees and markups.
Okay, but let's push on that. Maybe showing real rates was actually the better long-term commercial strategy. Maybe what looks like mission-driven sacrifice was just sophisticated business thinking.
Fair point. Though I think the test is what happens under pressure, when growth slows or competition heats up. Do you stick to those principles or rationalize them away?
Right, and that's where organizational design becomes crucial. If your mission is just in the CEO's head, it evaporates under pressure. But if it's embedded in how teams make daily decisions...
This is where I think Peiris's approach got sophisticated. From what I understand, they built mission alignment into their product development process itself. Teams weren't just shipping features, they were shipping measurable improvements to customer outcomes.
Can you be more specific about what that looked like? Because every company claims to be customer-focused.
Well, they apparently track things like total cost savings for customers, not just revenue or user acquisition. Teams could see whether their work was actually making transfers cheaper.
That's interesting because it suggests they were optimizing for customer value capture, not just company value capture. But I wonder how sustainable that is as you scale and face more complex trade-offs.
What do you mean by more complex trade-offs?
Like, when you're small, customer value and company value are pretty aligned. But at scale, you're managing regulatory requirements in dozens of countries, investor expectations, employee retention, and competitive markets.
I see. The mission might point in one direction, but the practical constraints pull you in others.
Exactly. And this is where I think Peiris's organizational thinking becomes really relevant. How do you structure decision-making so teams can navigate those tensions without constant escalation?
This touches on something I've been thinking about with product-led growth. Most frameworks treat it as a go-to-market strategy, but maybe it's really an organizational strategy.
How so?
If your product is truly pulling users in and converting them naturally, then your organization can focus on product quality rather than sales and marketing optimization. That changes everything about how you structure teams.
But doesn't that only work if you have product market fit that's so strong it's almost unfair? Like, Wyze was solving a problem that millions of people experienced as genuinely painful.
True. Transfer fees were this hidden tax that everyone just accepted. When someone finally made it transparent and cheaper, of course, it spread by word of mouth.
Which brings me back to my earlier skepticism. Maybe Peiris's success had less to do with brilliant mental models and more to do with picking an obvious problem in a market ripe for disruption.
But that feels too reductive. Plenty of companies have gone after obvious problems and failed to scale gracefully. There's something about how they maintained product focus while building the organizational machinery to support it.
Okay, I'll grant that. But let's dig into this organizational machinery. What specifically do you think they did differently?
One thing I've heard is that they kept product teams relatively autonomous but aligned them around shared metrics, so teams could move fast without breaking the overall customer experience.
That's classic platform thinking, right? Build strong interfaces between teams so they can operate independently without creating chaos.
Yeah, but the interesting part is what those interfaces were. Not just technical APIs, but shared outcome metrics that everyone optimized for.
Which brings us to a really thorny question. How do you design metrics that capture mission alignment without creating perverse incentives?
This is where a lot of companies screw up, right? They pick metrics that sound mission-aligned but actually reward gaming the system.
Exactly. Like, if you tell teams to maximize customer cost savings, maybe they start pushing users toward cheaper options that are actually worse overall experiences.
Or they optimize for short-term savings in ways that hurt long-term platform development.
So, how do you think Wise avoided those traps? Or maybe they didn't completely avoid them?
Suspect they probably accepted some suboptimal short-term decisions in exchange for organizational clarity. Like, maybe some teams made choices that weren't perfectly efficient, but the overall system stayed coherent.
That's a really important insight. Perfect optimization at the component level might actually hurt system-level performance.
Right. And this connects to something Paris seemed to understand about scale. As you grow, maintaining alignment becomes more important than optimizing individual decisions.
But that creates a new problem. How do you know when alignment is helping versus when it's become a straitjacket that prevents adaptation?
That's a great question. I think it depends on whether your core mission is still generating new opportunities for innovation.
What do you mean?
Like, if making money transfers transparent keeps revealing new problems to solve, currency cards, business accounts, whatever, then mission alignment drives growth. But if you've solved the core problem, then alignment might start holding you back.
So the mission has to be fertile, not just clear.
Exactly. And I think that's what made Paris's approach work at Wise. Financial transparency wasn't just one feature. It was a lens that kept generating new product opportunities.
But here's what I'm wrestling with. How do you distinguish between a genuinely fertile mission and post hoc rationalization of whatever was working commercially?
That's hard. Maybe you look at the decisions they didn't make, like what opportunities did they turn down because they didn't fit the mission?
That's smart. Though I wonder if we have enough visibility into Wise's internal decision-making to really evaluate that.
True. We might be pattern-matching success stories onto frameworks that sound coherent in retrospect.
Which is why I keep coming back to organizational structure. That's more visible and harder to fake. How teams are actually set up, how decisions flow, how conflicts get resolved.
And from what I understand, Wise did make some pretty specific structural choices, like keeping product teams small and giving them real ownership over customer outcomes in their domain.
But small teams with real ownership is basically the standard startup playbook. What made their version different?
I think it was the consistency as they scaled. A lot of companies start with autonomous teams, but then layer in more process and hierarchy as they grow.
Right, because coordination costs explode. You need more managers, more meetings, more alignment processes.
But maybe that's where the mission alignment really pays off. If teams are genuinely aligned on outcomes, you need less coordination overhead.
That's theoretically elegant, but I'm skeptical it works in practice. Real alignment is incredibly hard to maintain as context changes and new people join.
Why do you think it's so hard?
Because alignment isn't just about agreeing on goals. It's about sharing mental models for how to navigate trade-offs when goals conflict. That's much more complex to transmit.
You think Paris's mental models were really about creating shared frameworks for decision-making under uncertainty?
Maybe. And if that's true, then the specific content of the mission matters less than whether it generates clear decision-making heuristics.
That would explain why some mission-driven companies thrive, while others get paralyzed by noble goals that don't help with actual choices.
Exactly. A A good mission isn't just inspirational, it's operational. It helps you decide what to do Monday morning.
And maybe that's what made Wyze's approach to product-led growth different. It wasn't just about building viral features. It was about building an organization that could consistently ship improvements customers actually wanted.
Which requires really tight feedback loops between customer behavior and internal decision-making.
Right. And those feedback loops have to work at scale, not just when the founders are personally talking to every customer.
So we're back to organizational design. How do you build systems that preserve customer empathy and rapid iteration as you go from 10 to 10,000 employees?
I think this might be where Paris's thinking was most valuable. Not the specific tactics, but the recognition that product-led growth is fundamentally an organizational capability.
And organizational capabilities are path-dependent. You can't just copy what worked at Wyze and expect it to work in a different context.
Which is probably why so many companies struggle with this. They try to copy the surface-level practices without understanding the underlying organizational logic.
But that raises a final question for me. How much of Wyze's success was about Paris's individual insights versus the specific market conditions and founding team dynamics?
That's always the counterfactual we can't answer, right? How much was replicable wisdom versus unrepeatable circumstances?
And maybe that's okay. Maybe the value isn't in copying their approach exactly, but in understanding how mission, product, and organization can reinforce each other.
I think you've shifted my thinking on this. I came in focused on the product-led growth mechanics, but the deeper insight might be about organizational coherence.
And you've convinced me that mission alignment can be more than just nice-sounding rhetoric if it's actually built into how teams make decisions.
Though we're still left with the hard question of how you know whether your mission is genuinely driving value or just providing cover for what was already working.
Maybe that's the most honest place to end. The frameworks sound clean in retrospect, but the actual experience of building at scale is messier and more contingent than any mental model can capture.
Which might be the most important lesson. Stay curious about what's actually working, not just what should work in theory.